This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Sarah Gardner. Now it's time for your letters. Here with me to dispense some financial wisdom is Jill Schlesinger, editor-at-large for CBS Money Watch. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
Hey, we're going to talk to our listeners here in a minute. We got a pack of letters in the mail. But first, how was your Thanksgiving and what are you doing with those turkey leftovers?
My Thanksgiving was fantastic.
Good.
I mean, beyond fantastic. But here's the thing. I'm not one of those people who feels like I have to make my leftovers into something else. But because I wake up so early for work, usually between 4 and 5 o'clock every morning, I can really use this as just having a meal literally at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't care if it's turkey. I'm just going to keep eating it. I need fuel. So that's what I'm doing.
Turkey and stuffing in the morning.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
Okay. Jill, let's go to our first caller, Matthew in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hey, we've got listeners in Puerto Rico. That's fantastic. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we don't have a station here, but I listen to the podcast.
Great. Tell us what you do for a living in San Juan.
Well, I'm in law enforcement, which is a high-risk job to begin with, but San Juan is a very high-crime area, so there's that added element.
All right. What's your question for Jill?
Well, I was married about a year and a half ago and was transferred out here to Puerto Rico, where I will have to work for about 5 years. And while I'm out here, it's just my wife and I. We don't have any kids, and we aren't planning on having any kids. But what I want to know is, do I need to have a will?
This is a great question. The thing that's confusing about this is that you think Puerto Rico, it's a territory. It's just like the U.S., same rules. Not exactly. So let me ask a quick question, Matthew. You are a U.S. citizen, correct?
Correct.
And your wife is as well?
Yes.
Well, as I understand it, if you're a U.S. citizen and a resident alien and you're a bona fide resident of Puerto Rico, you're only required to file a U.S. federal tax return unless if you have income outside of Puerto Rico. And you're basically subject to all the United States estate tax rules. So that's you. You're a guy, you're born in the U.S., you're living down there. So if something happened to you, we have federal law that takes over. Now, that said, under federal law, what would happen is your assets would pass to your wife normally. But that doesn't get you off the hook. I want you to write a will because there are certain quirks to this, which it might go partially to your wife, but partially back up to your parents or to a close relative. So what I think you should be doing, especially because you are in law enforcement and in danger, you want to draft a will. You want to draft a power of attorney. So if something were to happen to you, your wife could make a business decision, a financial decision on your behalf. And you really want to draft a healthcare proxy. If something happens to you, you want to assign her the right to make a healthcare decision on your behalf. Those three documents are your most important guideposts to get through the estate tax rules.
Let me ask you, Matthew, how old are you?
I'm 34.
34. And how dangerous is the job that you have?
As a law enforcement officer, I go out and have to arrest people that have committed crimes. In addition, there were over 1,200 murders in the Commonwealth last year. That rate's gone down a little bit, but it's still a pretty dangerous place to be as far as violent crime goes.
And if I can just pop in here, I mean, look, this is a situation that I would actually say bears so much responsibility on both of you to really move forward and to say exactly what you want to happen. I would say this even if you weren't in a risky kind of business, things happen. What I would suggest, though, is I would suggest that you seek out an attorney to help you out with this because there could be some local rules specific to Puerto Rico that you should be caring about. I really like hiring attorneys to do wills. I don't think you should download it online. Each state has specific rules. See someone who is specializing in estate law in your state, or in your case in Puerto Rico, who can really guide you through this process. It's really important. What you don't want to do is leave your heir or your heirs a mess to tangle with without a will.
Jill, I'm just curious, any downside to people writing a will when they're younger, or is it just good to get it out of the way when you're in your 20s or 30s?
I think it is great practice to actually have a will and to tell the world how you want your assets disposed. You want to tell people where things go. Maybe you've got your mom's silver and you want that to go to your daughter, but whatever it is, just put it down.
Right. Matthew, does it help you?
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling and stay safe, okay?
Thanks.
All right, let's go to our next caller. It's Jessica in Exeter, Rhode Island. Jessica, welcome to Marketplace Money.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And what do you do in Exeter?
I actually work in Newport, Rhode Island. I work in domestic violence prevention.
All right. Tell us why you're calling today.
So my partner and I have been dating for 4 years, and we're talking about getting married. My question is around, do we marry each other's debt, because we both have some debt that we're trying to get out from underneath? And secondly, how separate can you keep your finances once you are married? Because right now we have things really separate, and
right,
that's working for us. And so we're just trying to figure out what makes the most sense moving forward.
Jill, what do you think? What do you need to know here from Jessica?
Okay, so here's the deal. First of all, kudos to you for actually thinking about this. I think a lot of people walk into their marriages and their relationships and they don't really sort of think through, well, what does this mean financially? So that's number one gold star for you, Jessica. Now, second thing is, you don't actually marry into somebody's debt. You don't. That's not what happens. And in fact, you can keep your credit scores separate. Remember, every credit score is actually based on your Social Security number. When do you start to combine these two credit scores or get the bad effects of somebody else's credit? When you apply for credit together. So when does that usually happen? It would usually happen if you said, okay, we're done renting, we want to buy something. And you then start, you say, okay, I want to buy a house, I have to get a mortgage, and both of you need to be listed in order to get the mortgage. Then you are starting to marry your credit together. Same goes for a credit card. If you actually have a joint credit card, you're now marrying your credit scores, or a car. That's why when you talk to credit experts, what they'll tell you is, as much as possible, keep it separate. Don't marry your credit unless you need to. And in your case, it's totally fine to get married. You will have your debt. He will have his debt. It's a question for you guys as a couple to discuss whether you actually want to be on the hook for one another's debt. Maybe you make a lot of money. Probably not if you're advocating for domestic violence. But that's a conversation to have. But just because if you were making tons of money and you say, I just want to help out my spouse and I'm going to help pay down that debt, it doesn't put you on the hook for that debt. Only on the hook when you co-sign for something.
So can I ask a quick question? I own a house. So I mean, we live in it together, but I bought the house and it's entirely in my name. The mortgage is in my name. Does that stay the same?
Absolutely. And okay. Not to be very anti-romantic, but I've heard that sometimes weddings don't turn out the way they plan. So keep the house in your name. That is your house. That is your mortgage. If, you know, a lot of people will get married and they'll say, oh, I'm just going to sign over the title of the house to my spouse.
Okay.
There's actually no reason to do that. And okay, it almost would be preferable, especially in a state like Rhode Island, where what you bring into the marriage will be yours. You do not live in a community property state. You live in a state where what you bring in is yours, and if something bad happens, the marriage doesn't work out, you walk away with what you brought in. So it's okay to keep that nice and clean.
Okay.
So what I would like to wish you is fantastic success in your future relationship, and I also want you to have a cup of clam chowder at the Black Pearl for me, because it is probably the very best clam chowder in the United States.
Thank you so much, and I will do that sometime very soon.
Very good.
Okay, Jessica, let us know what you decide and if wedding bells are in the near future, okay?
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to our next caller, Peter in Eckerd, New York. Hi, Peter. What's up?
Well, my wife and I, we live in a house now that we own, and we are in the next couple of years going to be building a new home to move to nearby. And we're very early in the process, but I had a very simple question, which has been a little bit baffling, which is how to find out the financial solvency of a building contract. I've heard a couple of stories of people we know and people we don't know of building contractors going belly up in the middle of construction. Part of that is due to, I think, the financial crisis of the last few years. But it just brings up the question, how does one know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've never built a home.
Oh, that's a great one. So actually, my sister-in-law is a contractor. And so I have always asked her about this. Like, how do you know good from bad? I have you. You're in my family. It's easier. And, you know, she's always said to me, you can always start with the Better Business Bureau. But she says, you really can't stop there. Besides asking for references, you want to make sure that you ask as many people as you possibly can if there are any issues with people they've dealt with in the past. And you can always start to look at some consumer advocacy groups. And, you know, once you get a list of different contractors, you want to get their license numbers and certificates of insurance. I would never do business with someone who doesn't carry insurance. You know, pretty much everyone has to carry it, but sometimes they'll kind of shuck and jive a little bit with you. And you can also use that business license to contact your local municipality and say, hey, is this guy really on the up and up? Once you get to that place, though, it's tough, okay? Because you don't really know if this guy's got 16 projects going on at once or you're the only one. But I would ask, I'd say, how many projects are you going to have going on? Am I number one, my number two? Make sure you get everything in writing. Don't pay for anything up front. Always ask for copies of receipts, those kinds of things. It's a pretty risky business here, but I feel like if you ask enough people, you'll get the information that you need. It's really important to do that.
Yeah, we're very, very thorough on this stuff. There's also something that I heard of recently called contractorcheck.com.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't want to tell you to do it is that there are a lot of builders who aren't on it, who are good guys, and so I don't want to ding someone for not being on that list, you know. And also I think that if you really talk to people who have gone through the process, they're going to tell you about the normal stuff, which is, well, you know, sometimes it's hard to get in touch with them, sometimes it's easy to get in touch with them. Who knows? You know, it depends on what's going on in your area. So, is there a lot of building going on in your community right now?
Yeah, there's a fair amount, I think. There's a fair amount of building, and there's also a lot for sale.
And that probably augurs well for being able to knock out a good deal and being really clear up front. You know, I think that a lot of people run into problems because in the boom times especially, they felt a little bit weird, like, oh, my God, I'm just so lucky he's showing up today. Isn't that fabulous, you know? And so you want to be clear. You don't want to kind of be a nag, but you can say, it sounds like you're super organized, and say, this is what my expectations are. And, like, it totally fine if you can't fulfill my expectations. If this sounds like a pain in the neck project, or you think I'm going to be a pain in the neck client, then no problem. Let's move on.
Great. So, Pete, thanks so much, and good luck with the home building.
Thanks to you guys. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, our last caller today is Sybil in Sherman Oaks, California. She has a question about getting a health savings account, otherwise known as an HSA. Hi, Sybil.
Hi there.
Welcome to Marketplace Money. So what can we help you out with today?
Well, I had questions on HSAs. I've been a longtime listener, and I love the show. But most people call in about HSAs. They're somebody who their business offers one, or they already have one. I'm actually looking at getting one, and my health insurance, my company, doesn't offer one. They only offer an FSA.
First, tell us a little bit about your situation. Why are you looking at a health savings account and flex spending accounts? We'll get to the explanation in a minute, but why are you looking at it?
I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer about 4 months ago. So I know that every year I'm essentially going to be having a lot more expenses because I have medications now, and I have to do a lot of testing for the next 5 to 6 years.
Yeah. First, very sorry about your cancer diagnosis. That's very tough. We'll turn to Jill for the expert explanation. HSAs, FSAs, just a little primer here first, Jill.
Okay, so a flex spending account, which, you know, a lot of people use, is offered through your employer, right? Okay, so here's the deal. What happens is, if you've got a flexible spending account available to you, what your employer is basically doing is setting up a way for you to push money into an account that's used for various expenses. So these flexible spending accounts, it's a little bit more like unreimbursed expenses. Maybe it's a type of provider, maybe chiropractic isn't covered fully, or if it's for co-pays. It's a little bit harder to get the over-the-counter drugs covered, but you can do it. But it's deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance, and any healthcare costs that your current health insurance does not cover. Now, what the deal is right now is with an FSA, starting in next year, you have a cap of $2,500 that can be put aside into that flexible spending, okay? Do you think you're going to spend more than $2,500 in this constant care and updating and all that?
It's very possible, yes.
Really? So that would be in addition to everything that's covered. So $2,500 out of pocket?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, because I have a very high deductible plan anyways.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a little concerned that it is an issue. Also, I've had a flex spend in the past, and the reason why I've never utilized it again is because, in general, I'm mostly healthy, and so I just kept losing that money.
So, okay, you just brought up a great fact about the flexible spending. They are use it or lose it plans, which is why opticians love December. They always have these people running in saying, I need a pair of glasses. I haven't used my flex spending. So now let's compare this for a second with an HSA, a health savings account, which same thing, tax advantage, right? So money goes in pre-tax and the funds that are go in, they're not subject to federal income tax. Unused amounts, though, can be carried forward. And that's a huge difference. What the deal is that an HSA, you have to be in a high deductible health insurance plan that meets this IRS definition. It sounds like you may be, by the way, because based on what you're saying. And you know what? I think that what you really have to do is you have to, you know, obviously talk to somebody who can help you out with this, which, you know, by the way, it's basically a bank account that's owned by you, regardless of where you work. And what I might do, just because of your situation specifically, is do you work with a CPA?
I do.
I would talk to a CPA. And here's why. I think that there's going to be an interesting situation for you. I don't want to make you like tell me how much money you make, but the bar for deducting medical insurance and unreimbursed costs and just general expenses on our tax returns could be limited based on whether the fiscal cliff happens, based on how much money you have. I would talk to your CPA and I would say, should I just stick with the FSA? It's $2,500. I know I'm going to use that this year. Or do you really think it's worth it for me to establish the health savings account? Because look, in 2013, individuals can actually put more money into the health savings account. It's, I think, $3,100, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it might be $3,200. So that'll give you a little extra. And I like the idea that, as you said, you're going to be needing care in the future, that you could carry it forward. But I also don't want you to have to go through the rigmarole of doing it if really the flex spending is the easiest and best solution for your current situation. And best of luck. And, you know, it's such a rotten thing to get a diagnosis like that, but you're being so smart about how to actually push this forward and say, I don't want to have my – I at least don't want to get, you know, soaked on the financial part of this.
Well, thank you very much for helping clear that up a little bit. It really was something that has been weighing on my mind and what the difference is between the two.
Okay. Sybil, best of luck to you, and let us know what you decide.
All right. Well, thank you very much. You have a great night.
Okay. You too.
Bye.
And thanks to Jill Schlesinger of CBS Money Watch for all the good advice. Jill, it's been great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. I hope to come back at every holiday so that we can talk about our leftovers.
Our favorite
thank
topic.
Goodness.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.